on the Line program here at thecommentary.ca. The Story of French is a new book from Knopf, which is the study of the life of the French language, its development, spread, history, and future. I am joined now by one of its authors, Jean-Benoît Nadeau, who co-writes the book with Julie Barlow. They reveal much about a language that is made fun of and maligned, but which is robust enough where its speakers have tripled in 50 years. And though its use in global institutions is waning and its status as the world's lingua franca has been declining for two centuries, it is the number two choice of students around the world. 2 million teachers and 100 million students. It's the official language of two G8 countries and three European nations, yet its speakers are so insecure that they pass laws banning the use of other languages. Its rules are rigid and complex that few master it, and a group of 40 immortals are its custodians. Mr. Nadeau and Ms. Barlow, who are married, have researched and traveled the world charting French's course in this new book, which retails for $36. They have written extensively in both English and French in L'Actualité and other publications. Their previous book, 60 Million Frenchmen Can't Be Wrong, was a critical and popular success, and I suspect the Story of French will be as well. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Jean-Benoît Nadeau. Good morning, Mr. Nadeau.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. Your first language is French, I assume, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You met Julie at McGill.
At McGill, first year, first day, first class at McGill University.
Were you an English speaker then?
Yes, I spoke English, but not very idiomatically. I had done some English immersions. I had done some basic English at school, the kind of things that you do like 20 minutes a day until grade 12, and then did some immersion. And when I arrived at McGill, my English was far from being perfect.
Now, Julie's first language is English, correct?
Yes, she's born in Southern Ontario.
How did you learning English compare to her learning French?
Well, this is a different process because Quebecers, especially the parts where I come from, it can be fairly well picked up. The presence of the English language is real. Whereas some other parts of Quebec, there's much less presence aside from the couple odd tourists that come 2 months a year. When I was a child, I could watch Bugs Bunny in French or in English in morning, Saturday morning TV shows. Julie was different. Julie comes from Southern Ontario. There was not much French around. In fact, she didn't even know that there were French Franco-Ontarians before she came to Quebec. And so she learned school French, basic core French, 20 minutes a day, and it's only when we met that she decided to be serious about it, and we sort of practiced immersion. And what we've done is essentially something that's a good trick, and people should do it when they have a bilingual setting. Every week we change language. She took a basic course to get herself up to speed. She took an immersion, and then after that, every Monday morning, we would change language. So starting one Monday at rising time, we would speak in English for the whole week, and the week after it would be French.
Really?
And so on. Yeah, it works fine.
Now, I understand that you're adopting twins.
Yes.
Now, they're from Haiti, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So they speak French, I assume.
Creole. They don't, which is close enough to, in terms of vocabulary and pronunciation, at a simple level to French, but the grammar is completely different. It has no relationship. In fact, the grammar might be closer to English.
So I'm curious because I asked about Julie learning French. Was that difficult? Will it be difficult for your twins to be learning the French that you and Julie speak at home here in Canada?
No, and it won't be, no, because in fact Julie will speak to them in English, I'll speak to them in French.
Really?
And what we know about that method is that at the beginning it's a little bit, they seem to not learn as fast, but at one point they get up to speed and then they have two languages.
I guess, is it easier for kids to learn it than, to learn French than, let's say, someone who is older?
Naturally, it's why the brain does all it can so that people learn a language. I mean, you speak English, but there was a time when you didn't, and it's the brain does that better for children, babies, children, and as time goes, there's not as many available neurons. It's a very well known process to neurologists. And neurolinguists, but on the other hand, people find out that when people are dedicated, like Julie, who learned quite late at 20, the learning can be done very properly. In fact, Julie is assumed to be a francophone when she goes to France. Nobody thinks that she's an English Canadian.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, what sets, I guess, French apart from other languages in terms of its, I talked about the rules are rigid and complex, and then you have, you know, the French Academy, these so-called 40 immortals.
Uh-huh.
What is it about the French language that's allowed it to survive, despite the fact that English has become so perverse in society around the world?
Well, for Canadians, Canadians and Americans have a bit of a thwarted vision on the language just for the fact that in Canada, for two good centuries, French was a language, a marginalized language. But in other countries, in other places, French is the language of social promotion even today. If you want to be somebody, if you want to study at university, if you want to have a fighting chance to even get a bank loan, you must have spoken French. You must have learned French. And French cohabits in most countries with languages like Arabic, Wolof, Kenya, Rwanda, and multitude of present language, Flemish, naturally, German. And in many places, in most places, in effect, French is a language of social promotion. Canada and the United States are more the exception than the rule. And that's why in the case of Canada, what happened 40 years ago with the Quiet Revolution and the laws on official languages and the Quebec language laws were so important. That is, it suddenly gave a premium to learning French, which didn't exist in the Canadian history in the previous two centuries. So that is very important to understand. And that is why more people speak French today than even 10 years ago. Because it's not just a cute language or a nice language to sip wine or become prime minister. It's actually a useful language, if not a necessary one.
Well, what is this about the French being difficult to master?
I'll let you finish your question.
Have you found that as someone who speaks French, who's spoken French, I guess, his whole life, and compare that to someone's experience who's learned it late in life, like Julie?
Well, actually, it's interesting. We actually discussed with linguists on the question of that, and what they say is that French historically has been a language harder to access because there are so many rules and so many prescriptions, but easy to master once you know the rules and the prescriptions. English is the other way around. English is easy to access because there are a few rules, apparent rules, but difficult to master because it's all exceptions and it's all peculiar cases. It's a bit like the common law. And as a matter of fact, it's very much a difference in spirit between the two languages. The academy is often seen today as a very retrograde and institutions, but when it was created in Europe in 1635, it was the epitome of modernity. No European language was coded and defined and even had a dictionary. The first dictionary of the English language, written in English, was written a century and a half later. And the French were the first people to define their language in a French dictionary, written in French, to have a grammar in French defining their language, and clear rules of syntax. And it was the first language that was made easy to learn in Europe. Otherwise, they had to learn it through immersion because there was no no text, no book of reference, no material to refer to and learn at a distance. The only languages for which it was possible were Latin, Greek, Hebrew, and Arabic, because these were classical religious languages that were available through religious texts or through classics of classical literature. But French was the first extremely modern language in the sense that we understand today as a language defined. And you have to realize that 6,000 of the linguists attribute that generally recognize that there's about 6,000 languages in the world, and only about 200, no more than that, have a full defined modern dictionary, a full defined syntax, and a full defined grammar. All the rest are, people don't agree. A good example is Berber, Tamazit, as it's called in Berber, which is spoken in North Africa. People between each country don't agree whether it should be written between from right to left and left to right, or using Roman characters or a syllabic system of writing, like Arabic. So even within the language groups, you have four models of writing it, and that is actually quite typical of languages in at present, but also of European languages four centuries ago. And that is why the French Academy was imitated by most languages, most of the main languages of Europe and of the world, in some form or another, the only exception being English language countries.
Now, the French Academy, they're looked after, I guess, by 40 immortals. Can you paint us a picture of what they walk around in funny hats and swords? Is that
yeah?
Correct?
Well, when they have their annual meeting, but it's a lot more. We use that image because it is often the image that comes that is sort of the representation that a lot of people use when they want to talk about the French language, say in the New York Times, or like everybody seems to know about the French Academy. What seems to And they do wear these Napoleonic uniforms and Napoleonic hats with red and green embroidery and a sword, and they make these speeches once a year. But what most people don't realize is that the French Academy does absolutely nothing, and that in fact its role is a lot more symbolic than real. It has made eight editions. It's working on the ninth edition of a very bad dictionary that's always behind its time, and that was never used by contemporaries, even in the first edition of 1692. The only people who used the dictionary of the French Academy were foreigners, because it gave them the best tool to know what was the usage of the French court, and that was the perfect book of reference for all the salons and the salons of Europe and the courts, which for whom French was the language of reference. And in fact, the French Academy, even today, is as a symbolic role, is sometimes extremely conservative. For example, it resists the feminization of titles in French, but at the same time, can be modernist. It tried many times in the last two centuries to reform French spelling, for instance, and some elements of grammar. The last attempt for reform was in 1991. And that reform was rejected by a lot of people, and it never went through. So and that underlines the fact that the real power in the French language, so to say, is not in the French Academy; it's in the speakers.
I'm talking with Jean-Benoit Nadeau, who's discussing his new book, The Story of French, $36 from Canoffi's, co-written that with his wife, Julie Barlow. What is the Alliance Française?
Alliance Française is an institution that is private. It's not a government institution. That was created in 1883, by a group of French people who, some of them were diplomats, but they were doing this on a private basis for the mission of carrying the French language abroad. These were years in 1883 when French was isolated diplomatically in Europe, And when they were sensing the much stronger competition of German and Italian and English, naturally. And so they created this organization whose purpose would be to send abroad and facilitate the transmission of French culture. And there are nowadays 1,200 Alliances Françaises in the world, 14 in Canada, 130 in the United States, 50 in the UK, I think. My wife went to Lesotho and visited the Alliance Française of Maseru, the capital. British Council has left Lesotho some years ago, but the Alliance Française is still there, and in fact keeps the, and maintains the only public library in the country. It's an interesting organization, very different from the Goethe Institute. It's often compared to the Goethe Institute or the British Council. But the British Council is all about Britain. The Goethe Institute is all about German. The French Institute is about French. The Alliance Française is about French. But, for example, in Dakar, they will teach Wolof as well. In San Francisco, they will teach English. So they are privately run by the people who started it. They sort of have a franchise called Alliance Française, but they are autonomously run. What's interesting of the Alliance Française is that it spawned all sorts of other efforts of the French to spread their culture, and to this day, the French are the leaders in the field of cultural diplomacy, or what Americans call public diplomacy. The network of schools and collèges and lycées français abroad is an example of that. There's a thing called la mission laïque universelle, la mission laïque française, which is another network of French schools, but on purpose of being secular. These run mostly company schools, like for example, Elf Aquitaine was in Calgary, and they opened, went to Calgary 25 years ago, and they opened the first French, from France, company school in Alberta, and that's just an example. There's also the less known Alliance Israélite Universelle, the Universal Israeli Alliance, which was created in France in 1862. It's an ancestor of the Alliance Française. And their mission back then was to civilize Jews. I put it between quoting marks. They were a group of French Jews who had been enjoying full civil rights for 70 years and were quite prosperous. And they wanted to make sure and help Jews, mostly in Russia at the time, and North Africa, to enjoy the enlightenment that French Jews enjoyed. I'm putting all this in brackets because that's the way they saw it. And indeed, they were a prosperous lot that enjoyed full civil rights then. And they inspired the Alliance Française and the old movement of French cultural diplomacy. Very often, the French films that you will see in British Columbia or in Alberta or in the state of Washington, for example, are often
sponsored by some
vehicle of French cultural diplomacy. Like, they're very, very, very proactive.
So with organizations like these, you're hopeful then that French will continue to prosper, I suppose.
Oh, yes, and there are many other examples that I am not... Because what is the great development right now in the last 20 years is that French is... in fact, our book shows that French has not been just about the story of France for a good 4 or 5 centuries and even more. And that one great vehicle that's developing right now in the last 20 years is the fact that all these Francophone places that exist, building relationships that short-circuit France completely. For example, it is New Brunswick legal scholars specialized in French, in common law in French, that were instrumental in the conception and the writing of the Constitution of Mauritius. Quebec veterinarians are a reference in Algeria, where they practice a lot of artificial insemination and want to develop their system. The University of Sherbrooke wrote the first MBA program in French and then implanted it in, of all places, Morocco. Belgium is very active with Ivory Coast and Burkina Faso. France is very active with former Zaire, which was a Belgian colony, but not a French colony by all means. You have these types of movements that didn't exist 20, 25 years ago. Quebec music is the music of reference right now in France. French films are doing much better than they did 15 years ago, and Quebec films as well. So you have a kind of movement that didn't exist, not to mention even the what is called the Agence Universitaire Francophone, which was created in Montreal in 1962, that links no less than 600 universities that are francophone or partially francophone, and that aims at networking tens of thousands of researchers and professors in all sorts of fields. Julie and I visited in Dakar, the University of Dakar, and on the campus, what is called the campus virtuel of the Agence Universitaire Francophone, the virtual campus, which is a huge building, about one of the best kept in the whole city of Dakar, and certainly one of the most modern in, with respect to information technologies. And we met some students who were developing the first cyber law program by correspondence. So there's all sorts of these. So French is happening. And there's an entire world of French for anyone who learns. It's not just about Chateau in France and Poutine. There's a lot more to it. And of course, it has its challenges. One of the great challenges that it will have to meet in the couple 20 years, the next 20 years certainly will be one of distribution. For example, you might wonder why a French daily is not available in Vancouver or Victoria or Alberta every morning, giving you the news in French. So it's one of the, maybe it will be by internet, but the issue of making culture available and broadcasted will be the great challenge. But it is certainly happening.
And you've enjoyed writing this book?
Oh, very much so. It was a challenge, writing a book like this with four hands. Between four hands and two heads is a difficult proposition, but it went well. And we're looking forward to the next one.
And what are you working on now?
There will be something maybe on. But I have my personal projects. I have something about Canada, but for the French, French publisher, and Julie and I are also working on other projects for books, either on language or on some other very interesting people. Because in the line of our previous book, 60 Million Frenchmen Can't Be Wrong, but. I'd rather, I'm a bit hesitant about even telling the topic, but it would probably be something about either Canada or the United States or Mexico. We're toying with it. We're hesitant. We're still playing with our options there. But I mean, as you mentioned earlier, we're about to adopt twin girls from Haiti, and so then our next 6 months, the priority will be to take a good hold of the ship.
Indeed. But until then, I do recommend people pick up this book because it is a highly readable, highly accessible book for even people like myself who have trouble understanding these things. And congratulations on that, and congratulations on twins.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. The Story of French by Jean-Benoit Nadeau and Julie Barlow, published by Knopf, $36. I'm Joseph Plano.